Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And the 0-2. Swing and a miss. Struck him out. 101. Ohtani is gone, and so is the losing streak. The Pirates win the opener here in Anaheim 10-2 tonight.
Finally. Thank goodness.
Feels good to get the first one out of the way. Hopefully many more to come and with this team, and hopefully a lot more success.
Heard it right here on 93.7 The Fan. If you were up till the wee hours of the morning, Pirates thumped the Angels 10-2. Mitch Keller gets his first major league win by going five innings, and as you heard in Eric Sports Update, not giving up a hit to Mike Trout, who's only the best player on the planet. Shohei Ohtani, who is in the discussion for best players on the planet or up-and-coming players on the planet, not named Mike Trout. And Albert Pujols, who isn't any good anymore, but my God, he has a big name, so we have to talk about him in that same context. I don't really blame people for being excited about that because he's still got a little pop in his bat. That's what's on tap today, and it's brought to you by Fatheads 15-Packs. Now available in Sunshine, Daydream, and Bumbleberry. You've heard the saying. Oh, by the way, Andrew Filippone out this week as he is recovering from surgery. You've heard the saying, if a tree falls in the forest and nobody is around, does it make a sound? I think that that sort of question is supposed to be some sort of existential statement on the nature of being present for things. I don't really know. I'm a radio guy. I'm not that smart. I'm smart enough to know of the quote, the saying, and I'm not smart enough to decipher what it's supposed to mean. Just smart enough to be stupid is what I'm saying here. But I could apply very much the what I think is the meaning behind it. If a tree is falling in a forest right now and I am not there to see it, did it actually make a sound? I assume that it did, but I don't know for sure, I guess, right? If the Pirates are 4-24 post All-Star break and they demolish the Angels in Anaheim in a game that doesn't start until 10:10 Eastern time, and Mitch Keller gets his first win, and basically every hope for the future guy, Reynolds, Bell, Newman, hits a home run, and the other team does all the stupid crap for once, if that happens, but it all happens in Anaheim, when only people like me are awake watching, does it really count? We know if we look at any kind of map of the Pirates' last 29 games that because of last night's win, which did happen, it's a thing that happened in a stadium where ostensibly at least several thousand people saw it. We know that it ups their record to 5-24 post All-Star break. But when I sat there last night, and tell me honestly if this is your experience watching the Pirates right now, mired in what their general manager, what basically everybody is acknowledging is one of the toughest stretches for them, so it's got to be tough for fans, that any of us can ever remember. Tell me if this is not a somewhat relatable experience for you. I have my little home office in the Muller Manse, the Carnegie Mansion. Lots of mahogany, leather-bound books, a big oak desk. It's the Resolute desk. I just, you know, got it modeled after what's in the Oval Office, of course. I'm in my office, I'm working on some other stuff, I'm just up, sound very low, dogs in the other room, baby sleeping, dog sleeping, wife sleeping. Not a creature was stirring, except for a bald-headed idiot. And I watched that game last night, and this is what I want to know if it's relatable to you. I don't think I'm kind of blowing smoke here. I watched everything happen. Keller get Trout out, get Ohtani out, get Pujols out. The Pirates just have a laugher for once because they got out to an early lead and then kept it. And nothing about the game stuck with me. Do you know what I mean? nothing about that game resonated with me. I didn't sit there and say, hey, Mitch Keller had a pretty solid day. You know, this is a pretty good game for him. Handful of starts before this, what, two in the big leagues before this? Not good ones. Comes back up in start number three and battles and wins. Goes five innings. Not efficient, but whatever. Like, I didn't have any of those thoughts of diagnosing it. Josh Bell gets to 30 home runs. Brian Reynolds keeps hitting. Kevin Newman keeps hitting. Jacob Stallings, nice little bright. None of that. There was no resonating factor for this game. And I think when your team is maybe a year away, so maybe their record's not great, but you know that they are on the come, as Mike Tomlin likes to say. A team that should be watched. You're jotting down notes, right? Okay, Brian Reynolds, that was good. Josh Bell, here we go. Maybe he's getting red hot again. And you're taking just checking little boxes off the list. Man, last night it was just a thing happening on a magic picture screen that I can change the channels with without having wires. Whee! It could have been any game. It could have been any teams. That is the net effect, the worst thing, the most insidious part, not insidious, the most kind of bummer part of the Pirates being this bad. The game last night where objectively good things happened, where the other team was the one kicking the ball all over creation, did absolutely nothing for me as like a fan looking for signs of hope. It was just stuff happening on a screen. It wasn't anything that I projected down the road or connected to in a significant way. I felt last night like the decision to have that game on was part curiosity, motivated by the fact that, hey, it's Mike Trout. How many times a year, if you don't have the MLB.TV package, do you get to watch Mike Trout? Not many. It was Mike Trout, and more or less that was it. And that was like a habitual sort of thing. Well, I'm working, I'm doing other stuff. I might as well have the game on. I felt a little bit duty-bound by the whole thing. Well, hey, I talk sports for a living. The Pirates are one of the teams I talk, so I need to have this game on to be watching what's happening, right? It wasn't, oh, hey, can't wait to watch. See what's happening. Yeah, the team fell 5.5. Like, imagine being a Reds fan right now. They've made a bunch of moves. They're not going to make the playoffs. They're 5.5 out. They're the perfect example. They had a weird reverse Pirates start to their season. Run differential good, record bad. But if you're a Reds fan watching Reds games right now, aren't you watching them with the idea that, hey, next year, this could get very interesting, very quickly? You're watching them actually, I feel like, engaged, if you're a Cincy fan, I would imagine, feeling like better days are not only ahead, but they're going to be here soon. There was no connection like that for me. This idea right now that I saw maybe yesterday that what I was really watching was a couple of young players take important steps. Reynolds just keep chugging along. Bell start to really snap out of it. Keller getting especially that first, that albatross off of him. That first win finally. Monkey off the back. It all felt like an abstraction. And that, for me, is the biggest casualty of this bad run of play. You don't ever want to be in a position as a team, I think. And I do strongly feel like a lot of people listening to this show right now can relate to what I'm coming through. You never want things to get so bad for fans, I think, to feel so hopeless that they might still consume what's going on out there. They might be at the park watching when you're at home playing, but it's not really soaking in, right? Do you ever hear the expression, oh, somebody's hearing me, but he's not listening to me? Somebody's reading, but they're not comprehending? That's what I feel like right now with the Pirates. I'm watching it. It's all going through the old eye sockets. My brain is processing it. I understand what happened. But that's where it ends. Like, that's just kind of where it ends for me. And I don't want that to be the case. I want to be invested in what Mitch Keller did last night. I want to be invested in Bell and Reynolds. I want to be happy. The fact of the matter is, they haven't won back-to-back games in over a month. They have won 5 of 29 since the All-Star break ended. That is so crushingly bad. So inept. And the way they've gone about it has been so bad on the field. pitchers can't stop giving up runs. They can't stop booting the ball. The way it has transpired, the record itself, the method by which games have been lost, turns a win like yesterday, one that I'll play the end of it here. I'm going to play the end of this little clip here for you because I think it's relevant. It turns even this.
Win the opener here at Anaheim, 10-2 tonight.
Finally, thank goodness.
I can't even say that. Like, I think Rock's speaking for a lot of people there, but I can't even invest that sort of emotion in it, right? Finally, thank goodness. Yeah, okay, it's great. They didn't lose 9 in a row twice in a 32-day stretch, but that's all. Man, that's a small consolation right now for me. And I don't want it to be that way, but it is. That's where I've come down on them. Tough to take anything out of Mitch Keller's start. Like, again, to keep with the theme. Oh, he went 5, gave up 5 hits, 2 runs, 1 earned, 4 strikeouts, 2 walks. They're just numbers on a page. Like, I'm watching the game. It's not like I'm passively just sitting there in its noise. I mean, I'm turning and watching pretty much every pitch, and then you turn and do other things, and then you watch another pitch. I wasn't critically evaluating Mitch Keller. I wasn't sitting there saying, oh, this is why Mitch Keller's going to be the future of this rotation. It was just Mitch Keller's back, and he didn't give up 8 runs in the first inning kind of thing. Mitch Keller hung in there. Mitch Keller got the best player in the world out. Okay. And you know one of the other reasons why that is, too, as the Pirates are now 49-69? This is not a young baseball team that is bad in front of your very eyes. Bell's 26, Frazier's 27, Newman's 25, Reynolds is 24. I'll say that Newman, Bell, and Reynolds are supposed to be your core there. None of those are young ages for baseball players. None of them. I look up and down their roster, and I don't see youth. I see players who are at an age in modern-day baseball where they should already have sort of shown you what they are. You can't conflate youth with inexperience. You can be inexperienced but not be a... You can have an inexperienced baseball team, but you can have that inexperienced team be kind of old. 27, almost 28 years old is the average age of the Pirates. Pitchers are slightly younger. They're 27 on the nose. But that's not young either. Man, go look at the pitching. Musgrove's 26, Archer's 30, Williams 27, Brault's 27. I'm not exactly saying names that light the world on fire either. Vasquez is 27. Yeah, Keller's 23, but that's one dude who just finally got a win after his first couple starts being catastrophic. The Pirates are going to play the Angels again tonight. I'm going to have the TV on at 10:10. I'm going to be sitting there on some level like a computer would, processing dispassionately what I'm watching. But for me, the greatest negative consequence of what we've all borne witness to is the fact that outside of having the TV on, having my eyes trained on it, the old cranium's not going to be doing any processing. It's just going to say, oh, this is baseball. It is the Pirates. They are 5-24 their last 29 games, which still is a pace, mind you, that would be the worst in Major League history by a considerable margin post-All-Star break. By the way, can I get a little credit for that? I'm the one who threw that little tweet out a couple weeks ago. Then a guy named Sean Anarelli went and did the research, so he deserves the real credit. Then I see it pop up in Starkey's column a couple days ago in the PG. Where's my medal, damn it? Huh? On to things that aren't abstract. I haven't had a chance yet to talk about that first Steelers preseason game. A game that they won, but who cares about that unless, of course, you had action on the game, which, of course, was a 1.5-point Steelers spread, and they win by 2, huh? I think there was a very obvious pick for most encouraging Steeler in the first game of the preseason. And I'm going to tell you who that is and why coming up next. First, you can text us on the Edgar Snyder and Associates fan text line. Edgar Snyder and Associates reminds you to text responsibly. Who was the most encouraging Steeler in the first preseason game? There's a clear answer here. Coming up next.
I would just say things kind of slowed down a little bit, you know, and just knowing more of the, you know, the playbook and just being more of a well-rounded receiver. You know, it's real important, you know, just because it shows the coaches, you know, it gives them a true evaluation on you. And, you know, it builds trust with the quarterbacks as well. So, you know, that's a big factor that goes into it.
That guy was the brightest bright spot, I thought, for the Steelers in their preseason opener against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. James Washington led the receivers in that game. So this wasn't like a statistical thing where he was down the line and I'm plucking something out of thin air here to seize on. He had four catches for 84 yards and a touchdown and had a heck of an effort on another one. James Washington, I thought, was the clear bright spot for this reason. A lot of people talked about Devin Bush and wanted to evaluate him, and that makes sense because Devin Bush is the guy they traded up 10 spots to get. Devin Bush is the guy that's going to plug into the middle of that defense. And to hear a lot of people speculate and postulate their theories on what's going to happen, Devin Bush is going to be the difference between the Steelers being basically middle of the pack but feeling like a more inept defense than that and being an elite unit. More on that later in the show. He's got all the hype surrounding him. James Washington was, for most of last year, a disappointment. Witness the dive to nowhere in Denver. Witness just him not really ever seeming to get his sea legs under him as a first-year pro. Witness maybe that little whisper of some optimism as things got late in the season, and that was about it, right? James Washington, though, I thought did exactly what you would have wanted to see him do. Was a reliable target. Made a big catch downfield in that game, a ball that was underthrown by Josh Dobbs, where James Washington had beaten his man, and if the ball hits him in stride, he might go the distance. But he went back, high-pointed the football, and came down with it in traffic for a 40-plus yard gain. And because I believe pretty strongly that the Steelers are still going to be a team that wins or loses in a lot of ways this year based on their offense, and because that offense doesn't have Mr. Big Chest around anymore to be the one so that Juju Smith-Schuster is going to be the 1A, they're going to need a lot of people, James Washington, I would argue, chief among them, to do a lot more heavy lifting. And he doesn't have to be, by the way. This idea of who's going to be the number two receiver opposite Juju Smith-Schuster, the more I thought about it, the more I realized that in the NFL in 2019, how many teams have a true number one? Like a bona fide superstar. Michael Thomas, Antonio Brown, we still assume. Julio, DeAndre Hopkins. I'm starting to already get close to the end of the list of here is a bona fide stud. I wouldn't even put Juju in that class yet. He has to prove it without Antonio Brown around. Point being, there are teams who might have a top receiver. There are teams who might have a defined, okay, Mike Evans is another one. This is our guy, Keenan Allen kind of situation. But what you need in most cases, or if you're a team that has that sort of guy that's going to get most of the targets, you need people that can fill roles behind him. If Juju is going to be the guy getting 15 targets a game or whatever it might be, 12 to 15 targets a game, I don't really care if James Washington is not the quote-unquote number two. I care if he's going down the field and winning jump balls. I care that he's stretching the field. I care that James Washington, that Ben Roethlisberger has the confidence in James Washington to say, it's third and two. I think a high percentage play here is to send James, is to have a go route for James Washington to try to get him singled up because I think he's going to make the catch and beat the man that's trying to cover him. I don't care if Dante Moncrief gets more targets. I don't care if Ryan Switzer and Ben Roethlisberger have a freaking buddy cop comedy after this season's over because he targets Switzer 160 times on one-yard drag routes. I don't. If James Washington gets the ball thrown his way five times a game and three to four of them come down as catches for a lot of yardage, he will be doing his job. He will be, I think, validating the Steelers' decision to draft him. I'm not saying it's all down the field only. It just feels like that because that's what we saw him do against Pitt, just keep running open down the field years ago. It's probably what Kevin Colbert saw, let's be honest. That's why he got drafted. There is other stuff he has to do as it's part and parcel with being a receiver that's getting the ball thrown his way a decent amount. But I'd argue if he's showing like basic confidence and making those long catches and stretching the field on the sidelines, he's doing what they need him to do. And that's why him going 4 for 84, making a tough catch down the field, scoring a touchdown, that's why for me that was the clear, most encouraging performance of that first game. Up next, Antonio Brown lost his grievance. Antonio Brown is in a... Well, here's what I'll say. He lost his grievance. And then before the show, I said to myself, but I think he's got a point maybe. And I want to talk about why I think he has a point in the first place with this grievance. But as often happens with Antonio Brown, something new came into the story, right? Something new happened that has sabotaged my efforts to just stick with the original plan. Antonio Brown is doing something that is so cheap, I can barely stand it. And yet, I don't think he deserves the most scorn. I will explain all of this coming up in a couple of minutes, so stay close. First, you can follow us on Twitter at 93.7TheFan. That's driven by Shorkey Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram locations, North Huntington and the North Hills. Just when you think things have gotten as weird as they can get with Antonio Brown, they go and get freaking weirder. And he's not the only culprit this time. We'll talk about it soon. Sometimes in this business... And this happened last Friday when Pony and I were together briefly before he decided to go have surgery, penis surgery, you might have heard. I'll have an update on that for you in about 45 minutes, having been in contact with Andrew. So clearly he's alive and texting. He said this on the air. He said when weird news sort of breaks in real time or close to it, it can throw a wrench into your plans. I had it all planned out. One of my big takes, because this is a business full of takes here, right? We live for takes. Jim Rome, have a take, don't suck, clones, right? That's like his whole motto. And I had a big take about how Antonio Brown might be sort of off his rocker with all these protests, but in the same way, he might be a little crazy like a fox and have a point here, wanting to wear that old Shutt brand helmet that he's been wearing since he came into the league, the same one Brady and Rodgers wore up until this year. And here's the point with that. The NFL is only doing this because they're saying the helmet is not safe enough anymore. It does not meet their new standard. And they are not grandfathering it in, right? And they're only trying to keep players safe. It's only an initiative they care about because they don't want to get sued. Like any corporation... They want to cover their rear end. That's all this is. Cover your ass situation by the NFL. Hey, your helmet's not safe enough. You have to wear this one. It's been approved. So that's the long and short of it. And to which I say, player safety is a good thing, but to some degree, when you're dealing with something that a guy has played with his whole career, or in this case, multiple guys have played with their whole careers, isn't the more prudent thing to do to just say something to the effect of, we'll grandfather you in, but, I don't know, write some provision in. Cover yourself, basically. We're writing you in and grandfathering you in, but if you get injured wearing this helmet, you're not allowed to blame the fact that you continued to wear the helmet. By choosing to wear the helmet, you basically take us off the hook, but we'll let you do it. That seems like a sensible solution, catering to stars. I bet you if Brady and Rodgers were given that choice along with Brown, hey, you can keep wearing your old helmet, but it's on you if you get hurt. You can't come at us and say, I suffered a head injury because I wore this helmet that you had already deemed as unsafe. I think all three of them would do it. In hockey, Craig McTavish was the last guy to play without a helmet. They grandfathered him in. I don't think goalie masks became mandatory until a certain point in time, and then guys who were not wearing them were allowed to not wear them. Now, that seems like a crazy thing, but Craig McTavish is notable. For in an era when everybody had to wear helmets after they became mandatory, you'd see one dude flying around the ice with no helmet on. And he was allowed to do it, and it was sort of, hey, user assumes all risk. The sticks are getting better. The guys are getting stronger. If puck hits you in the face, good luck. And he played, and that was that. In the NHL to this day, if you have been a guy who's in the league long enough to have played back when those visors weren't mandatory, you can continue to not wear one. I believe Ryan Reeves is a guy who doesn't have to wear a visor. I believe. And if you don't wear a visor, you get hit in the face, oh well. I'm all for player safety, but in those cases, I feel like the NHL has done the sensible thing. Let the guys who have been playing like this all along keep playing like it. Antonio Brown, to me, has a point in being mad about this. Just let him wear the helmet. Let Brady wear it. Let Rodgers wear it. Let them all wear that helmet. Grandfather it in and cover yourselves however you have to. I'm not a lawyer. Don't ask me to draw up the language. It just felt like an arbitrary thing that they should follow the lead of another contact sport. I know hockey is not as violent, but let's be honest, hockey's got a major concussion problem on its hands too. I think you let the guys wear the helmets. Do people, I know it's Antonio Brown, and I know nobody bought the retirement thing, and of course he caved. But is it really worth generating one unbelievably stupid 24 to 48 hour news cycle about this? Just let him wear the helmet. Why does this have to be a story? Why does it have to be grist on the usual NFL offseason mill? Which brings me to the far more amusing part of this. So that's what I was going to say, right? Here we go now on the part of this story that I just cannot fathom. For it is so stupid and strikes me as so cheap by Antonio Brown and so careless by another party. Here we go. Pro Football Talk, not long ago. It's also not the top, like, blared across the front, but it was in the little sidebar, the top story on ESPN's main page. Because, of course, it is. I'm just going to read directly from Pro Football Talk's story. I think Michael David Smith wrote this one. Raiders wide receiver Antonio Brown is on the hunt for a helmet of his preferred model that the NFL will let him wear, and he's offering a memorabilia trade if he can get one. Brown wrote on Twitter today that if someone will give him a Shut Air Advantage helmet that fits him and is less than 10 years old, Brown will trade a signed practice helmet for it. Quote, I'm looking for a Shut Air Advantage adult large helmet that was manufactured in 2010 or after. In exchange, I will trade a signed practice-worn Raiders helmet. At issue, continues this article, is the NFL's rule that players can't play in helmets more than 10 years old. Brown's been wearing the same helmet throughout his career, tried to bring it with him from Pittsburgh and have it repainted to play in it for the Raiders. But that helmet's now more than 10 years old, so the NFL won't let him wear it. So it's the age of the helmet, specifically. The NFL will, however, let him wear the same model of helmet. Shut discontinued the model 8 years ago, so finding it won't be easy. I'll stop. Couple things here. So you don't really care that the model of helmet you've deemed to be less safe. It's that it's too old. So a three-year-old helmet just has taken enough shots that apparently, no, we can't do this. That's one stupid thing from the NFL, further reinforcing Brown's point that he should be allowed to wear the helmet. Who cares if it's 10 years old versus 8? Two, Antonio, my God, you just got $30 million guaranteed. Tell somebody you'll pay them $1,000 and I bet you a bunch of these helmets will turn up real quick. Tell somebody you'll pay them $5,000 and I bet suddenly a bunch of Air Advantage adult large helmets that are less than 10 years old will pop up. You've got $30 million guaranteed. You can't spare that much. You got to trade a practice signed helmet. Come on. Who wants that? I don't. It's like a famous home run ball. I'll give you a signed bat. How about some money? Thank you. Third here, and probably the dumbest party in all of this. What is Shut doing as a brand? How do you not have molds of these helmets? If the NFL's only gripe is that the helmet itself is too old, however, the model of helmet is still kosher, whether you discontinued them 8 years ago or not. Now, I know nothing about manufacturing processes for helmets, right? But don't you have casts, like a master mold, of very literally every product you've made if you're a helmet manufacturer? Just for the sake of being completist about it, just for the sake of sort of having your ducks in a row if you ever need it for just this sort of situation. One of the highest profile players in the league. Hell, you know that Tom Brady and Rodgers are wearing it. Are you not keeping that around in case of a rainy day? Hey, yeah, hey, don't worry, guys. We've got the models. We'll make you each like 5 more of these. Oh, yeah, they're good. And then you got them for another 10 years. Shutt could have totally fixed this. Discontinued? Have it. Churn out 5 apiece for whoever wears them, or at least the high-profile guys. The crappier players can get 3 apiece and be done with it. This should not be hard, but apparently it is very hard and very difficult. I don't think what I am saying right now is breaking new ground as like the most forward-thinking rant of all time. Common freaking sense. Apparently that's in short supply though. Fan weather brought to you by Sun Chevy in McMurray. Join Sun Chevy for their all-star open house all month long and open the door to a new Chevy. Crappy today. Humid, showers, thunderstorms, 79, 65 overnight tonight. Not as humid tomorrow. Could be a little bit nicer. Maybe a thunderstorm, and that would be mainly south of the city. A high of 82. Jason Mackey is going to join us, and he is doing yeoman's work today at the top of the hour.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with autopay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without autopay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.